episode 207 of the Cricket Hurl Weekly. I don't know why I said it like that. People knew what they were tuning into, presumably, when they clicked on the link. Anyway, we are recording this on Saturday, so a day earlier than it's going to be pushed out. So we are going to start by talking about WPL so far, but you never know. Something really dramatic might happen in this afternoon's match that we aren't going to be talking about. So Friday did see some drama in WPL. A bit of a shock result, Sid, because the UP Warriors beat the Delhi Capitals. It was a bit of a last over thriller, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Delhi Capitals went down in a last over thriller. That's twice in this season they've kind of choked in the final over. They choked once bowling in the final over.
And this was with the bat, wasn't
batting
it?
In the final over.
Lots of swiping across the line.
It was just a really bonkers finish to the game. They ended up needing two runs off two balls, and they really should have got
that. Yeah, they should.
And the number 11 comes in and takes another huge swipe across the line trying to send it over cow corner and gets caught. And it's like, you've got to put that a little bit on the coaching team, I think, there, because they should have been having words and going, look, you just need to bunt it and run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but they really, really messed that up.
It's that thing in the, you know, your head to, oh, I can go for the glory shot. And it's like, no, this is the big leagues. You can not, you know, if you're the number 11, and you just didn't play the game situation. So it was kind of disappointing, really.
Yeah.
But maybe lessons learned, you know. Maybe this is a lesson learned that will help them when they get to the final. And it does look like they're still, you know, heading in that direction, okay, kind of thing. So Delhi Capitals, let's pop the table up here, together with the chance of qualification. Delhi Capitals and Mumbai Indians still on top with their 98% chance of qualification. So now that's as we predicted.
Yeah.
Perhaps less as we predicted is the Royal Challengers Bangalore.
Yeah, they're having quite a good tournament, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not doing too bad. I mean, we did say that if, you know, Smriti Mandhana went on a run, that, you know, that's the sort of thing that could kind of propel them, you know, up the table. And, you know, they're a good team on paper. And, you know, notwithstanding yesterday's result, UP Warriors haven't been great this season. Gujarat Giants have not been great either. But yeah, Smriti Mandhana. So she's, you know, she's been kind of fighting out with Meg Lanning for the purple, is it purple cap or is it purple cap for the bowlers?
I think it's the orange cap for the batters.
Anyway, whichever it is for the batters, she's been fighting it out.
Why do they have to have such terrible colours for those caps? I mean,
yeah, also if you're in Gujarat Giants, I mean, lol at Gujarat Giants player wearing the orange cap,
don't
but it's the same.
Don't you mean?
it's the same colour, they're all wearing orange caps.
So it's all a bit strange.
Yeah, but Smriti Mandhana has gone on a bit of a run. It's kind of interesting. I was having a look this morning at her statistics. Let's put some more numbers up on the screen here. Because I want to think about her running between the wickets.
Okay.
Because the bottom line is, if you have a look at, you know, what we're showing here, she's not doing a lot of it. So, you know, I mean, there is a standout number on this, actually, which is that Grace Harris doesn't run many twos and threes. But Grace Harris does run a lot of singles, and she obviously also hits a lot of fours and sixes.
Yeah.
Smriti Mandhana hits a lot of fours and sixes, but she's playing out a lot of dots. She's playing out more dots than any of the top batters. She's not running very many singles. She's not running very many twos or threes. She really doesn't like running between the wickets. And, you know, that's sort of fair enough in one way. She you know, her numbers kind of still do stack up. But you just feel that if she could run like Tammy Beaumont does, that she would just, like, move her game onto a whole another level again. And, you know, Can she make that change? That's a change that Tammy Beaumont made actually reasonably late in her career. So, you know, if Smriti Mandhana can add that as well to her game, she can become even, you know, an even better player.
Really interesting numbers there, Sid. I was actually teaching my sports journalism students last week about using data in sports journalism. And you know what they say about statistics, lies, damn lies and statistics and all that. Statistic that's been all around the headlines this week is about Shamini Mishmel, who has apparently bowled the fastest ever ball recorded in women's cricket. And I don't believe it. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. And it's just made me a little bit irritated. I won't say cross, because it's not really something to get cross about, but it just feels like it's something that's kind of happened to slightly manufacture a headline and some coverage around WPL. It doesn't really need to have manufactured headlines, because there's some great stuff happening on the pitch. But yeah, so Ishmael is meant to have bowled this ball that was registered at 80 miles an hour. I forget what that is in kilometres, which is obviously would be the quickest. But there's the speedometer has done some really bizarre things recently in women's cricket, and I'm just afraid I'd find myself a little bit sceptical about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the other side of the coin is that Hypocaust was talking about this. He talked about it. He did an interview with one of the Indian papers, I think the India Express, forgive me if I'm wrong about that,
okay.
Where he made a couple of points. He said, look, you know, first of all, yeah, these numbers are not great from the speed gun. There are actually two ways of measuring this stuff. Is that you can use a speed gun, which is a bit like the kind of thing that the police use to measure if you're going too fast on the motorway. But the ball tracking obviously actually does measure the speed as well, potentially. And the ball tracking is much more accurate.
Right.
But they're not using the ball tracking for this in this particular instance, even though the data's there and they're not releasing that data. So we don't know what the accurate data actually
is. That seems
a
bit soft to me.
But the other point that Hypocaust made, which I kind of, you know, have a lot of sympathy with, really, and agree with, is that, you know, it doesn't really matter what the number is. I mean, there's no doubt who is the best quick bowler in the world right now. Who's the fastest bowler? Who's the meanest bowler? Who's the most aggressive bowler?
Yes.
One particularly aggressive send off this week as well.
We did, we certainly did, yeah.
But there's no doubt who that bowler is. So in a way the numbers don't matter. You know, she is the fastest bowler in the world.
Well, that's what I mean. That actually let's get beyond just she's bowled one particularly quick delivery and talk about her as an overall performer.
Yeah.
I think an obsession with pace. At the expense of kind of talking about somebody's all-round performance is actually not very helpful. And I think I've probably made that point before on this very podcast.
Probably
anyway,
yeah.
We also had a question come in.
We did.
Week,
we had a question from Anne Glossop about Danny White, also a factor seeing Kate Cross is in a very similar situation. Will Danny White ever get a game in WPL? Does she still get paid? Missing all these England games to sit there seems crazy. And what about crossing? I'd like to see a rule where all the players in the franchise squads must play a minimum number of matches. So, well,
wow, there's a lot
what's
in
your
that.
Thought on Danny White and also Kate Cross there?
I think Kate Cross is in a different situation because if she'd gone out... So the question is really about whether it was worth them missing the first three matches of the England tour of New Zealand for them to sit on the bench in WPL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which both of them have done so far. I think Kate Cross is in a different situation because she wouldn't have been playing in those T20 matches because England don't see her as a T20 player, rightly or wrongly. So that's a bit different. I think Danny Wyatt's actually given an interview about this week. I can't remember which outlet it was with, possibly Crick Info, where she addresses this very question. And she said, I always knew it was a possibility that I might be sent out to play in WPL and be on the bench. And I'm okay with that. And the reason I'm okay with that is because it's allowing me to adjust to the conditions that we're going to be facing as an England team in Bangladesh in the World Cup later this year. So I think it's still valuable to me. And I think it's a fair point, actually, because she's still netting, she's still practicing. Even if she's not actually making it into the 11, she's still getting really valuable experience of those conditions. And actually more valuable experience than she might get if she'd gone to New Zealand, which is not going to be anything like the conditions that England are going to be facing in the World Cup. Actually, Australia have played more of a blinder than England have because they've got a tour of Bangladesh coming up. So they're actually going to be very familiar with the conditions, whereas the England players have got to play in New Zealand, which is basically England conditions Mark II, isn't it? So, mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a little bit of an aside. So I think that Danny White's kind of dealt with that a bit. She does still get paid, is our understanding.
Yeah, we think that's correct. Basically, as far as we understand it, you don't get paid if you walk away completely. So if you just leave the camp, obviously, you know, perhaps unsurprisingly, you won't get paid, but you will get paid if you're not selected,
okay.
Or if you're injured, and you know, if you get recalled by your national board because you're injured, you will still get paid as well.
Okay, so that's good. That's good for Danny White's bank balance. And Kate Cross's bank balance as well. And the final bit about a rule where all players in franchise squads must play a minimum number of matches. I don't believe that's ever been attempted in any franchise tournament. I'm certainly not aware of it in any women's franchise tournament. I don't know how workable it would be as a rule, because it would be very open to being gamed by teams, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure it really works because I'll say if you're the coach, you just go, oh, this person's too tired, or this person's injured, or she's got deli belly, or so. You know, I can see some sympathies for it, but at the end of the day, you know, these are professional cricketers playing in professional leagues, and you know, sometimes you're not going to get a game.
Yeah. Well, we're really excited for the WPL final, which will be next weekend, let's keep watching this week and seeing whether there are any other shock upsets. Now, let's move on to something a little bit closer to home, Sid, because there's been a whole lot more going on in Project Darwin this week. And perhaps that's understandable because the deadline for submitting a bid to host one of these tier one professional women's teams is actually on Sunday. So potentially the day that you're watching or listening to this, so the 10th of March.
That's tomorrow, Raph, and we haven't submitted our bid yet.
The cricket bid. I don't think we're allowed under current rules.
No, it's the Wokingham bid, Raph.
The Wokingham bid.
Wokingham.
It's Wokingham a first-class county now, akin to the MCC. We are Wokingham. Anyway, so bids have been coming in thick and fast. There's been a lot of kind of press releases, a lot of noise this week. So here are the numbers as I understand them, and please do correct me if you think I'm wrong. I think that there are 9 bids that are confirmed so far, officially via public statements, but there's no requirement to actually issue a public statement. You just have to send your bid to the ECB. So I also think, in addition to that, that there are 5 kind of dead certs that I haven't seen a press release from, but that have actually, that are very likely to have submitted bids. And those are Hampshire, Lancashire, Notts, Warwickshire and Essex. We know that Worcestershire have pulled out. They pulled out a couple of weeks ago, citing financial difficulties. And then there are 4 that are less certain that I'm not sure which side of the fence they're going to fall on. And those ones are Derbyshire, Gloucestershire, Leicestershire and Middlesex, who we might have expected to be very much in the running, but have been having financial difficulties of their own. So I make that, in total, 14 of the 18 first-class counties that we can be pretty sure are going to have submitted bids by the deadline. So to me, that feels like a bit of a big success story for the ECB, because you were a bit sceptical, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I was a little bit sceptical because I thought more of the counties might take the stance that Worcestershire have taken and gone, look, we really actually can't afford this, or we don't want to afford this, we want to focus on our men's team. But, you know, there you go.
Yeah, so there'll be some very pleased people at the ECB, no doubt, not least Beth Barrett-Wild, who's kind of overseeing this whole process. Obviously, you could say the difficult bit begins here, because they've got to actually judge the bids now.
Yeah, if you'd only got 8 bids, it would have been somewhat easier.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that's true, but I'm sure
she's
that they're
going to have to write, like, 8 Dear John letters.
I'm sure they're very pleased.
Maybe she can do it like Donald Trump, and, like, get them into the room and go, you're fired.
What are they fired from? They haven't been hired. Anyway, the big in terms of the public announcements this week, Sid, the Durham video is the one that's been making the big waves, isn't it?
Well, it has, and I think that a lot of the press releases that we've seen are actually a response to the Durham video, because Durham put out a fantastic video. It's really well produced. It's got a lot of good content in it, and it's just emphasizes kind of a real quality bid for me, and it kind of contrasts with where a lot of the other bids are. So they put out this video, and it was followed by a raft of press releases. No doubt, the media teams at various councils were told, oh god, have you seen the Durham video? Put out something now, get to work. But they've been unable to match the Durham video, but also been unable to match the Durham video in terms of what Durham are actually saying. So a lot of these bids kind of falling in, there's a couple of categories of where we're seeing things. I think that we've got people like for instance Kent and Somerset, both kind of similar kind of things that they put in their press release, which is basically, we did a lot of good stuff in the past for the women's game. We nurtured a lot of kind of important players. So, Somerset are going, we nurtured Anya Shrubsole when she was young. And Kent are going, we nurtured Tammy Beaumont when she was young.
Can I talk a bit about the Kent press release in particular, though? Because I think it's a bit of an odd one. Like you say, it does focus very heavily on all of the trophies they've won, and it basically says we're the most successful county of all time in women's cricket, which is true, but they haven't got any following on from kind of last week's episode when we talked about this sort of begging statement that they put out on their website. There's no announcement of any big name sponsors that they've managed to secure. There's no kind of quote from the overall CEO in the press release, who was the guy who basically said on the website, oh, we're not really sure about submitting a bid. And then, like, a week after that, they have submitted a bid, and they're kind of saying, oh, we're all over it and we're really pleased. But it doesn't make sense to me, because it feels like a massive about turn, and it doesn't feel like the whole club therefore is buying into it. And if I was the ECB, I'd be really sceptical about this sudden about turn. The other thing is that somebody's obviously inserted this quote that's attributed to Megan Bell, who's the current Kent women's captain and has played her entire career at Kent, has a really good Kent pedigree. But I don't know if whoever kind of given her this quote to say really thought about how it would look like, because while banging on about how successful Kent have been historically, the quote attributed to her is, "The opportunity to be a professional cricketer in Kent would be a completely different prospect to how my personal journey's been so far. Being able to train and practice as much as the men, using the facilities they use and having access to the same level of support staff would be an absolute game changer." So that to me, that reads like everything's been crap so far, but this would make it good. And I don't think that that's the impression that Kent were really going for. So whoever's written this press release and inserted that quote into Megan Bell's mouth, it's not been brilliant, to be honest. So that's Kent's one. Yeah, Somerset's one, as you say, is also a little bit like, oh, well, you know, 15 years ago, the ECB said we were going to be the home of women's cricket. And we sort of were for a couple of years. And then somebody realised that that was a ridiculous idea, because why on earth would you make one county the home of your national women's team? That's just bonkers. Anyway, that's a little bit by the by.
Yeah, so they're very much looking to the past, some of these counties. This is the complete contrast with the Durham thing.
Yeah.
Because what the Durham one was is, we want to be the best county going forward. We want to win the RHF trophy, you know, in the next 5 years. We're going to be the best county. So it's very much looking to the future. Also, a couple of interesting quotes from people. So we had a quote from Paul Collingwood. So they got Paul Collingwood on board. I mean, he's a big name. Whatever, you know, whatever you, even if you're not a fan of the men's game specifically, you know who he is. But not only that, he was like, the quote was, you know, "And my daughter is currently part of this pathway." Yeah. And that's the way to present it. You present it as like, you know, this is what we're building for the future. So, you know, that was just like incredibly positive, I think. And I think the positivity and, you know, looking to the future and saying, look, there's someone standing in front of the ground at the Riverside going, you know, this is where the players will walk out and play if they come and play at Durham. And it just feels like so much of a contrast. I mean, they're going to be really battling with Yorkshire. What have Yorkshire emphasised? Seems to me, if you read Yorkshire's press release, what's coming across from Yorkshire is going, well, you know, there's a really nice women and girls set up in Yorkshire currently. Be a shame if anything happened to it, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would be a pity, wouldn't it?
They're threatening,
going, well, we'll just kill your women's and girls structure in Yorkshire then if you don't give us the front. And then, again, there's no positivity to it, and that's what was so great. The other thing, they got Ben Stokes to actually do a bit. And how important is that? I mean, not only because Ben Stokes is, you know, obviously, you know, one of the biggest names in cricket globally and a huge celebrity, you know, that almost, as close as it comes to almost transcending the game globally, but because that's such an important thing to hear the England men's captain say that, you know, I want my county, my Durham, to have a women's team and to be the leading women's club going forwards. And all the, you know, all the, like the men at Durham, all the men that are in their first 11 and second 11, boys coming through the system at Durham will see that. And Ben Stokes will be their hero. And they'll look up and they'll go, oh, Ben Stokes thinks this women's thing is a really good idea. So it must be, you know, I'm going to help back that.
Yeah.
The kind of that allyship is so important.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
And it's not really been particularly present in the other public press releases.
So I just thought this whole thing was just so positive.
Yeah. And I know, I totally agree. What it suggests to me is two things. One, that the people at Durham have actually given serious thought and put in a lot of effort there, because Ben Stokes and Paul Collingwood are out in India right now, aren't they?
Yeah.
So somebody's actually taken the time to get them to record those bits.
Well, I mean, those videos are not quick to put together.
Exactly.
The quality of that, I mean, I put this video together and I know how long these things take.
And the other thing that I would say is actually that the ECB and Beth Barrett-Wild in particular at the press conference said that, yes, they are looking for all of these tick boxes about, you know, Kent have got the amazing ground at Beckenham, and, you know, they're looking for to see when are the women going to get to use the gym at the main ground and things like this. But the most important thing that they're looking at is the kind of, it's the heart, it's the love, it's
the enthusiasm.
Will that county embrace women's cricket? And what that video shows is that Durham are doing that. And so I'd be quite nervous if I was Yorkshire right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if they're sitting there taking for granted, going, well, we have the Yorkshire Diamonds, then they've got another thing coming, to be honest. And yeah, they are. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that unfolds.
Absolutely.
The other potential interesting one that's been announced this week is Northants, of course. A little bit of a surprise there. Who are potentially in the running to run the Sunrisers. We haven't had a confirmed bid from Essex or Middlesex.
Yeah,
Essex, we think, are quite key.
The MCC also potentially, I mean, they were kind of floating that as an option.
Yeah, they
were. The other thing is that Northants could potentially be an East Midlands franchise, although honestly, I can't see the ECB taking it away from Notts.
Okay.
Because you'd have thought that Notts must have had a bit of a nod and a wink when they took over the kind of East Midlands regional franchise.
Yeah. But then the players. Rumour has it the players haven't been massively happy with how Notts have treated them.
True, yeah, so well.
So I think that's really interesting because, of course, the counties don't have to say we want to host the Sunrisers or we want to host the Blaze or whoever. That's up to the ECB to try to allocate
them. Yeah, so they can get their geographical spread. Yeah.
And just finally, Western Storm. We don't know if Gloucestershire are going to submit a bid. They're one of the ones we're unsure about, but we do know that both Somerset and Glamorgan have submitted a bid. So that's going to be a bit of a battle.
Yeah, I mean, the ECB kind of decided to give the Welsh Fire the go with the 100 franchise, and they didn't give it to Somerset, and that was quite controversial at the time, but the ECB felt it was really important to, you know, kind of centre cricket in Wales.
Yeah.
Partly because it is supposed to be the England and Wales Cricket Board, of course, isn't it, Raf?
Well, exactly, and there are plenty of people in Wales who get cross when, you know, they put out things like "We Are England Cricket" and that Wales is almost like the forgotten corner of the ECB's remit, that they should really be the EWCB when we refer to them, because officially they are the England and Wales Cricket Board, as you say. And I think Glamorgan will be very much emphasising that Wales angle in their bid. So that's going to be a very interesting one to see. So yeah, good luck, Beth Barrett Wild. Some headaches there, but maybe it comes under the heading of nice problem to have.
Nice headaches to have.
And finally this week, Sid, the England under 19 team that's going to be touring Sri Lanka to play a tri-series against Sri Lanka and Australia in March and April has been announced. Some great names in there. They've announced a squad of 15, so huge congratulations to all of those players who've been selected. The definition of under 19 has perhaps been slightly elasticised, Sid.
Well, I think they've gone for under 19 as in terms of like the Australian summer, because they are going down under kind of thing, so it was Southern Hemisphere, so, you know. But the one thing I'd have done perhaps a little bit differently, and this is kind of more of a question than a comment, Raf.
That's a bit mad. You're a middle-aged white man. You should be doing more of a comment than a question, shouldn't you?
But more of a question than a comment is whether it might have made more sense to kind of prioritise players that are going to play in the next Under-19 World Cup. Because a few players like, you know, Alexa Stonehouse is on there, for example. Sophia Smale, they're 19 already, so they're not going to play in the next Under-19 World Cup. But on the other hand, you know, if they don't play those players, then maybe they just get smashed by the Australians, and it's a kind of demoralising event. So, you know, I can see arguments both ways.
They're trying to balance it, aren't they?
Yeah. The other thing is they haven't announced a captain for this.
Yeah.
Obviously, there will be a captain on the field. But I just want to emphasise this is kind of a return to normality, really. It's really very rare indeed that you can look at an under-19 squad and go, look, we can look at this squad and we absolutely know who is going to be England captain out of this squad.
Yeah.
You know, that was the case with Grace Scrivens. It's not the case anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if they wound up sharing it around a little bit. Give different people an opportunity to do that. So, but anyway, we'll see. Looking forward to kind of seeing what happens on that tour.
Hashtag Grace Scrivens bingo.
Indeed.
That's good because we haven't mentioned Alice
Several
Captain.
Points.
We haven't mentioned Alice Captain this week. So, oh, I just did. Good. Right. Well, we have to find a way to shoehorn her into every episode. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you in a week's time. Bye-bye.
Bye.